Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. And today, you're actually having two shows in one. We have the first half of the show. We're going to be talking about a circle of sustainability with Larkin Stentz. I'll tell you more about him in a minute. The second half of the show, we'll be talking about sustainable tourism and the big budget travel contest going on right now for between Astoria and Lewisburg, West Virginia, as for the designation of the coolest town, small town in America. And my guest for the second half of the show about sustainable tourism, et cetera, will be Dulcie Taylor, the owner of Old Town Framing and vice president of Astoria Downtown Association, Regina Wilkie, marketing manager of the Astoria Warrenton Chamber, and Judy Nyland, who's the executive director of the Astor Street Opry Company. So two shows, two exciting things to learn about today. So first, the first half of the show here is about sustainability. These days, there's a lot of conversation taking place in the media and in homes and businesses worldwide about what sustainability really means and how best to move in that direction. The term circle of sustainability is also being used. Today, we'll be talking with the owner, steward of Green Angel Gardens on the Long Beach Peninsula in Washington about what these terms mean to him personally, to his business, and how he sees our region, state, nation, and the world at large working with the principles of sustainability. Welcome, Larkin Stentz.
Well, good morning, Donna Quinn.
Glad you came over here today to talk to us about all the cool things you're doing over there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, this last year has been monumental in some ways because I actually went off the grid with two-thirds of the electrical needs of the farm being produced by a wind turbine. It's the only wind turbine that I know of on the Long Beach Peninsula that has been, quote, certified by the county. There's a couple of smaller ones, not quite so high. My certification was mainly the height of the tower that I had to go through. But that's been a goal of mine. And when we talk about the circle of sustainability, my overall goal is to, you might say, be off the grid completely or be on the earth grid.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about earth grid. But before that, talk about Larkin Stentz a little bit. Tell us about yourself and about what Green Angel Gardens is. Just a brief little, for those people who may not be familiar with you.
Green Angel Gardens has been going now for going on towards eight years. It was a certified organic farm. I intentionally gave up my certification of organic last year, and that's a whole other topic to go into, but having to do with finances and bureaucracies and everything, I still grow everything organically. I have 2 acres and 3 greenhouses. I try to run things as sustainable as possible. I grow food biointensively. It's a system developed by John Jevons of Ecology Action in Northern California, where we try to grow the food for the soil that grows the food for you. When you talk about sustainability in the circle, like the circle of life, we need to learn how to grow the food for the soil that grows the food for us. We can't always jump over to Fred Meyer or Brim's Nursery to pick up our nutrients. We need to figure out ways to make the soil more balanced all the time. Green Angel Gardens has a CSA, which is Community Supported Agriculture. It's a system where people can purchase a box of produce a week, and I produce the produce, and I also buy from other local farms throughout Oregon and Washington to make up what I don't produce. And I've had as many as 85 people now, 85 families have gone through the system. I have currently about 24 weekly boxes that go out. So that's probably one of the happiest moments during my week is delivering those boxes of produce to people. There's a number of businesses in town that get them, and I take them to their businesses and drop them off. And the people are so excited about it. And one of the benefits of it that I had never really looked at was they say, oh, thanks, I don't have to go to the store.
Oh, that's true. And what kinds of things are you delivering to them, Larkin?
In a typical box, they will get a dozen of local free-range eggs from a local farm in Long Beach. They get several different types of apples from Washington and Oregon. They get pears. This last week, we had leeks and carrots, purple potatoes. You can get cabbages. We get purple kales, rainbow chards.
That's beautiful. And it's mixes. Delicious. And it, and everyone realizes now how important. I mean, you just hear everywhere. I mean, it's not just thanks to Michael Pollan, but people are concerned, where does my food come from? So what about this term, sustainability? What does that mean? If somebody says, is this sustainable? Am I living in a sustainable way? It means you can just keep doing the same thing over and over again and not deplete your resources. What does that mean to you?
If you take it to the nth degree, there have been several studies done on this, and there is yet to be a farm that has farmed 100% sustainably. Mainly, that has to do with the humanure. Human manure, poop, whatever you want to call it, is one of the missing ingredients in the sustainability circle, because we take it in, but we let it go to the ocean, we let it go into the rivers, we put it in the ground, but we don't put it back in the soil. Where in China and Korea and Japan in the early parts of the 1900s, they were doing it more sustainably because they were using what's called night soil, and it was composted properly, and they put it back on the soil. So in terms of that loop, we're not there. What I'm trying to do at Green Angel Gardens is to show individual people some of the systems that they can incorporate in their own homes and their own backyards and their own communities that help to bring the overall picture into more of a sustainable balance. There are other places around the planet that are doing almost a lot more than the United States is, which is interesting. I've recently been reading a series of books called the Ringing Cedar series of books. They've come out of Russia. They've sold over 10 million copies in Russia alone. And in this one book, one of the footnotes has to do with gardens in Russia. On the 7th of July in 2003, less than 3 years after this particular book was released, which talked about getting people to do their gardens, Russian President Vladimir Putin signed into federal law the Private Garden Plot Act. According to this law, Russian citizens can receive free of charge from the state plots of land in private inheritable ownership. They can give it to their kids and grandkids. The maximum size of plots differs from one region to another, most cases between 1 and 3 acres. The produce grown on the plots is not subject to taxation. So there, and in Russia, the amount of produce that they produce, I'm like, I got to get away from doing that one. That's a tongue twister. They grow almost 70% of all of the potatoes that they eat in these gardens for the entire country. They grow over 50% of all the berries and fruit that they consume in these gardens. They grow over 38% total of all the vegetables that are consumed in these gardens.
That's where you think we need to be headed.
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, yes. When we turn around and we look at another aspect of this whole picture of sustainability, I was recently reading an article in a magazine called Annals of Earth, and it's called Eat the Sky, the Climate Crisis at the End of Your Fork. And this was done by Anna Lapp. And so her mother's the one that did Diet for a Small Planet and everything. And she's been looking at the big picture when it comes to things like our dinner. So if you look at eating meat, okay, we all want to go more local with meat. But if you look at the big picture of meat, what you have is billions of dollars from the United States government, our taxes, being given to large farmers to grow corn and soy. 80% of that corn and soy goes to feed beef in feedlots that produce methane and nitrous oxide that are 350 times more damaging to the environment than carbon dioxide. But as she said in there, it's hard to believe that people are looking at their plates and thinking about the environmental effects of what's on their plate. So there's a lot of different things going on. I'd like to segue now into the global picture. If you're familiar with a book called Earth, E-A-A-R-T-H, by, I think it's Bill McGibbon. And the reason he spelled his book E-A-A-R-T-H was because he said E-A-R-T-H doesn't exist anymore. What we have come to expect from our seasons, the amount of water, the amount of rain, the temperatures that we've become accustomed to and that our whole agriculture has been based on, doesn't exist anymore. It's a crapshoot out there. Last summer, we all know what it was like. There was no summer. It was all rain. I had an intern, and thank goodness I have greenhouses. Otherwise, my intern would have had no work to do because there was no place to farm because it was so wet all summer long. So in his book, Earth, he goes around the world and shows how farmers in all countries are up against the same event, which is we're going to have to bring it down more locally. What's going to happen locally? How can we do this? So on another global level, though, in two different places, we got 3 minutes. Okay, this is perfect. How can we do it? It's like the Monsanto will tell you, you can't grow all the food on the planet that you need for everybody organically. Well, that's totally wrong because we've been doing it and we can do it. But there are two people on the planet right now that I know of that are showing us that the spiritual connection that we have with the soil can have as much, if not more, effect on the quality and quantity of food that we consume than all the, you know, nutrients that we could put in the soil. One of these people is a man by the name of Trivedi. He's from India. And just, I'm going to jump straight through. What he has been able to show is through his ability to bless seeds. He took a handful of corn seeds, okay? He blessed them. They planted them. He got 500% more production out of those seeds than in test plots next to it. And when I questioned him, I said, wow, that's going to turn around and pull 500% more nutrients out of the soil. And he goes, no, you must read the research. I read the research. The soil was, if not the same, it was improved. That's one aspect. The other person is this woman who's written about in the Ringing Cedar series. Her name is Anastasia. She has talked about people who have their own plots of land, or their own thing, to go out and literally stand in the soil, barefoot, in the soil. It's going to sound woo-woo, you know, New Age woo-woo stuff, but it's proven. There's research on this. Stand in the plot that you're going to plant in. Take the seeds that you're going to plant for your own food and put them in your mouth, under your tongue, for 9 minutes. And what's happening there is the DNA from your body is commingling with the DNA of the seeds, and there's a message system going on there. So those seeds are then going to produce food that is more aligned with what you need.
It's so, all connected, Larkin. Everything's connected, isn't it?
Exactly. Can I mention one more thing?
Yes.
I'm going to take it out. So there's a lot going on. There's people on the left, people on the right, for and against all this stuff. So it's like a battle going on. And I want to go to a Native American story about this young Native American. Asked his elder, he said, you know, my mind is just chaos. I don't know which way to choose. And the elder said, well, in your mind are two wolves. You've got a dark wolf telling you all the negative things, and you've got a white wolf telling you all the positive things, and they're fighting to take you over. And the lad says, but which one wins? And he says, the one you feed.
That is a beautiful story, Larkin. And I think we need to have you back to explain much more about, because we really just touched on what Circle of Sustainability means. You've brought in some, I can see that, I know you research a lot, you bring in interns, you're teaching people. So let's schedule another program when we can do the full program with you about how you're seeing things shift worldwide. You've certainly mentioned some of those things, and also right here locally in our region. Thank you for all the good work you're doing at Green Angel Gardens. If you have questions for Larkin, if you're a member of the listening audience here today and you'd like to know how to reach Larkin Stenz to ask him about Green Angel Gardens, Larkin, how can they reach you?
360-244-0064 is my cell phone, 360-244-0064, or greenangelgardening.com.
Right, and if they drive by on the Long Beach Peninsula, they'll see the wind turbine.
Well, you can't. It's hard
can't
to
really see it
from
trees.
The road,
okay.
But you can come to the farm store, which is open daily from.
Oh, that's right. You have a farm store open daily 9 to 6, so where people can come and buy some of the things that you're growing.
Yep.
thank you for the good and important work you're doing, Larkin. And now we're going to transition here to the second half of the program. Larkin's going to stay here in the studio with us as we are being joined by, right now we have in the studio, Judy Nyland. Judy is the executive director of the Astor Street Opry Company. And for those of you who are Shanghai and Astoria fans, we have to thank Judy for all of her good work that she does, bringing that to us year after year after year. We also have Dulcie Taylor, who's just come into the studio. She is the owner of Old Town Framing and vice president of the Astoria Downtown Association. And Regina Wilkie is the marketing manager of the Astoria Warrenton Chamber of Commerce. And the three of you have just come in at very kind of late notice here. I'm so grateful to have you all here. So, hi, Judy. How are you today?
Hi, Donna. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm glad you're here. And Dulcie, good to see you.
Good morning.
And Regina, thanks for fitting us into your schedule. You're out taking photographs today, I know. So, and the reason that the three of you are here is to talk about an important topic. We've been visiting the first half of the program with Larkin Stentz about sustainability and what that means. And we're right, all of us here who are sitting here right now in the studio are aware that tourism is a huge economic driver in this region. And I wanted to talk to us about sustainable tourism and also have you all explain what's happening with Lewisburg, West Virginia, and Astoria, Oregon. First, let's just mention sustainable tourism. Here's a definition that I think probably really helps because a lot of people don't understand. They think, oh, tourism, we don't want tourists. Well, if we want to keep our galleries and our restaurants and our museums open and things, we need funding for that. And so here's what it says about sustainable tourism. Sustainable tourism is an industry committed to making a low impact on the environment and local culture while helping to generate future employment for local people. The aim of sustainable tourism is to ensure that development brings a positive experience for the local people, tourism companies, and the tourists themselves. You know, we're all really tourists on this planet, and at some point anyway.
Indeed.
But anyway, so who would like to start talking a little bit about tourism and why it is important here and what's going on with budget travel?
I can take the lead and you guys can jump in whenever you want to.
Okay, Regina.
You know, obviously tourism is a large industry in the Astoria area, and we've been able to maintain this sort of, I love how Donna puts it, this gritty authenticity. So we have, you know, the lumber trade and we have the fishing trade and we're able to embrace those roots. But with tourism, we're able to tell that story to folks that, you know, are from the Midwest and maybe don't get to be around, you know, a river like the Columbia and see how it impacts a community. So using tourism as an economic growth is wonderful. And then we can also use it to kind of tell our story and, you know, embrace our heritage. So.
Yeah, and Dulcie, you are the owner of a store downtown. You're with the Downtown Association. What's your perspective on this?
Well, I think the more people that walk through our town, the more the retailers sell things, the more prosperous the town becomes. We see a lot of visitors already from the cruise ships and from Portland or Seattle, or actually people on the cruise ships come back and visit again because they love the area so much. So I think the more people we have walking our streets, the more prosperity we'll have in Astoria.
And many of them, I know that there have been, right now, the woman who is working with the Astoria Music Festival, Lena Riker, she came here to visit many years ago,
right.
Fell in love with this area, moved here, and is now volunteering and doing incredible things with this community. And if she hadn't been a tourist first, she might not be a part of this community right now.
Exactly.
And Judy.
We do what we do at the Astor Street Opry Company, not just for tourism. We do it for the community. We do it for the people who come stand on the stage and learn acting and learn to become friends and have a better life, a quality of life. And we couldn't do it without ticket sales. If we don't have people coming through the door enough to support the programs, because it takes money to support these programs. It's not free. There's very little grant money out there for occupancy money or for just basic money to fund things. We wouldn't have the programs we have, which helps kids from 5 to 14 and young adults. It teaches them life skills. It gives them an opportunity to share and play and be creative. And in turn, they become better citizens.
And alongside that is that all of us give to our community through donations for schools or programs, fun things. The Opry Company donates money back into the community. If we don't have people coming in to buy things or tourists coming in and spending their dollars, then that makes our return to the community less.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Because there are funds which the tourists bring in, and then there is a lodging tax, and these go to the city receives part of those funds, and this really helps the infrastructure of our community. It helps to, again, keep the museums open and people employed at the
restaurants
and the shops.
It's even more than that. If my show doesn't succeed, if Afri Company doesn't succeed, I'm not going to remodel my house. I'm not going to fix my car.
Right.
I'm not going to do those kind of things. I'm not going to go out to dinner because I can't keep my thing going. It all feeds
all
one another.
Right.
So even though somebody might say, oh, a local person, let's say, who's lived here a long time might say, oh, there's a cruise ship in town today. Oh, I don't want to go downtown. Well, however, all of the retailers, so that you can go to Gypsy's Whimsy and get your herbal teas and get the things that you want, they need those people coming in and shopping and supporting their local businesses.
It's an additional boon to the community.
Absolutely.
And we noticed last year that our ticket sales were really down, and it was the first time it's been down in years. And it's partially the economy, but it was partially literally not selling the tickets. And if I can't keep my budgets up, I can't do more shows, so I can't do the shows that don't make as much money as Shanghai. So we can't do the edgy shows. We can't do the experimental shows. It just is all a catch-22. We have to have people coming through the door.
Right. Tourism supports local businesses. It supports the arts and, you know, nonprofits, all of these things. And so now Astoria is in the running to become perhaps, hopefully, designated as the coolest small town in America. Tell us about this budget travel competition and what local people can do to help bring that recognition to Astoria, which will then be a boost to our economy and for everyone who lives here.
The competition itself is something that happens annually through Budget Travel Magazine, and they take nominations and narrow it down to 20 towns. So there's 20 towns in the running, and we're in the last couple weeks. The contest ends on February 11th, and Astoria is in second place. We've been very close, and we have taken first in the last couple weeks. So we're trying to rally some more voters. And to be able to participate and vote in the contest, it's very simple. Go online. You can visit the Chamber's website, oldoregon.com, and there's a link right on our homepage that takes you to budget travel straight to the ballot. There's a map that shows up of the U.S. You click the star that represents Astoria, add to ballot, click cast your ballot, and you're done. Very, very simple. And the way they've set up the contest is that you can vote every 5 hours. So it's not just a matter of voting once, but it's a matter of voting repeatedly and then sharing the news with your friends and family that would also like to partake and vote.
And I don't know if you've ever looked at Budget Travel, but it's a really cool magazine. They always are looking for places that are smaller, not as expensive places to come, a little bit more greener and earthy and out-of-the-way places. It's a great little travel magazine for tourism that isn't quite as commercial as some of the other tourism.
And if you look at the description, their description of what they're looking for, edgy, a town that's on the rise, has some hipness going on. I mean, Astoria fits the bill totally.
Astoria is being promoted now as being historically hip. And I think for those people who are reticent, who say, oh no, will tourism change our community? Well, Lewis and Clark were the first tourists, so to speak. I mean, all towns, all places evolve and change in some way. It's that positive growth that's important, and how do you do that? And sustainable tourism is a boon to the economy. You also said that people can go onto Facebook and vote on Facebook.
Yeah, there's a huge movement on Facebook by a bunch of different people. Old Town Framing has a link, Baked Alaska, Purple Cow, the Chamber, Erp, and Regina on hers. And if you're on Facebook and you want to go to any of those pages, you'll find a link. Judy's on there.
Then you can share it with your friends.
You can share it with your friends around the world.
Well, on the West, because Astoria is the only town on the West. So the competition is between Astoria, Oregon, and Lewisburg, West Virginia. And they are getting out. They're having rallies and voting parties and everything. So what is Astoria doing? Yesterday, the mayor made a proclamation. Tell us about that, Regina.
Yes, we are now in Astoria Appreciation Week. The city council and the mayor proclaimed this yesterday in honor of the budget travel voting. In Astoria, apparently a week is 10 days long because it's February 1st through February 11th. So we're kind of having fun with it. So it's, you know, just a way to kind of spread the word and encourage some community spirit. As a marketing standpoint, not only is it great to be in Budget Travel, who has such great demographics and statistics from their readers actually making trips and spending money while they're on their trips, it's nice now to even talk about Astoria being in the running and, getting some publicity out across the state in the Northwest for people who might be thinking of taking a trip later this month and ding, maybe we should go to Astoria.
Mm-hmm. The cool thing, one of the really cool things to me is that not only are we in this competition with this tiny town on the East Coast, but the community rallying around this thing, and we have had tiny rallies, but we've jumped. Even in the last one day, we've got 2,000 votes after their rally.
So this is really a call to action. You're asking all the listeners on this program now and everyone throughout this entire region and in the West, vote for Astoria. If it becomes the coolest small town in America, it will bring great economic benefits to this region, to everybody, all the people who are working, from gas stations to you name it.
Correct. It will bring great economic benefit to the town, but it's also a pride thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a pride thing. It's a thing that makes us like our area more. Not like it more, but it definitely remember why we love it here so much.
Right.
I mean, it's a great area. It's a great place to live.
Yeah, we already know that we're cool, but it's kind of fun to be able to put a little flag out there and say, we are the coolest town.
And I think the bicentennial, the fact that this is Astoria's 200th birthday, yep. It would be a great coup, a great honor to have that feather in the cap, mm-hmm. and to say, yes, Astoria is, now Budget Travel is named as the coolest town. So Lewisburg is rallying people, and the three of you are out. I know the chamber's involved, the city council and people and the paper is saying, please go to the Budget
Actually,
Travel
even,
website and vote.
Travel Oregon's involved. Mm-hmm. Some of the TV stations in Portland are involved.
That's great.
There's been some articles in Washington that have been written.
Really?
Betsy Johnson is on Twitter tweeting about it.
All right. So there's some momentum. So what you're asking for is help promote Astoria as the coolest town, the coolest small town in America, and go to Budget Travel and vote. And people can do that again by...
The chamber website is pretty easy, oldoregon.com. Right on the front page says America's Coolest Small Town. You click the link and it'll take you to Budget Travel. Click the star for Astoria, add to ballot, cast your ballot, you're
and
done.
It's done. Very okay, easy. And every 5 hours you can vote. So, all right.
Astoria Downtown Association website, Facebook page also has links to it.
Okay,
too.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. It's a good thing. You got to vote.
Support the arts. Support all the nonprofits. Support the galleries, the museums, the things, the reasons that you love to live here. And a matter of pride. Well, we are just actually out of time here. And Larkin, you didn't even get to say another word here in the second half. But thanks for being here.
Thanks. It's interesting, the twist on the term sustainable tourism. It's almost like tourism is what helps to keep sustainable Astoria.
Yes, that's true.
Helps
what a good way to look at
Astoria.
That. It does. Tourism does help to sustain Astoria. We're not dying like some towns are, and a lot of that is thanks to the tourism industry. So thank you, Larkin Stentz, Judy Nylam, Astor Street Opera Company, Dulcie Taylor, Old Town Framing, and Vice President of Downtown Association, Astoria Downtown, and Regina Wilkie, Marketing Manager of the Astoria Warrenton Chamber. Thanks so much for you. Please, I encourage all of you to vote for Astoria as being the coolest small town in America. Thank you, Terry Wilson, engineer extraordinaire, and local banjo instructor Michael Brunn, for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today to vote for the coolest town and take a deep breath with gratitude for all the good things in your life and focus on those good things. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here now in this moment on the amazing planet we call Earth.